It's time for the Podketeer Podcast.
Good morning, Christopher Robin.
Oh, good morning, Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, well, glad to meet you. Name's Tigger. T-I-double-G-R. That spells Tigger.
Now, isn't this a clever disguise?
It's the Podketeer Podcast with your host, Mark Tanner. Take it away, Mark.
This could be about anything. And if you're like me, you wait and see. For I've got curiosity.
Hello, Podketeers. Today's going to be kind of a short episode. It's in honor of the 83rd birthday of Mr. Mickey Mouse, which is coming up on the 18th, which is this coming Friday. And again, I'm doing this show on a Monday instead of Sunday. Busy weekend, bought a car, bought a nice little BMW. And I'm still fighting off a cold, but much better than I was. So next up, what I've got is from the very first episode of Podketeer. I am playing a report I did on the origins of Mickey Mouse and some controversy as to where Mickey started and where Walt got the idea for him. I apologize for the audio. I didn't have the equipment that I do now at the time that I recorded this, and I was using just the microphone that came with the computer. So it is what it is. So hope you enjoy it, and trip down memory lane from a couple of years ago on the first episode of Podketeer. So on with that.
To those of you who have just joined us, welcome aboard.
It all started with a mouse. All right, but which mouse? Is it possible the mouse that inspired Walt Disney might have been Mickey Mouse, M-I-C-K-Y, which might have been around 2 years earlier than Mickey with an E? On the long train trip back from New York to L.A., Walt, accompanied by his wife, Lily, worked on a new character on his sketchpad. Now, later that character, which you might guess is Mickey Mouse, would become the anchor for his whole new empire. After losing the rights to his bread-and-butter character, Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, to Universal, Walt knew he had to come up with something to survive, and it would have to be something special. And Mickey was born that day in Walt's imagination and on his sketch pad. But is it possible that Walt had little inspiration from a wooden mouse named Mickey without the E? Because you see, at that time in New York City, where Walt was for his meeting with Universal, there was a little wooden toy that was just all the rage with the local kids. And his name was Mickey Mouse, M-I-C-K-Y. Mickey's manufacturer was the Performo Toy Company, which started in 1925 by a fella named Rene Grove in Middletown, Pennsylvania. They made wooden toys in his house, and his business expanded and had 25 employees, but even at 25 employees wasn't able to keep up with the call for his little toy mouse. At first, Germany met the demand for this kind of toy, but during World War II, America shut down Germany, and companies like Performo jumped in and took a foothold. Performo made over 40 different toys, but none of them sold like Mickey Mouse. And Mickey was distributed by the George Bortfeld Company, which just incidentally also distributed toys for Walt Disney Company. Now, by far, Performo's most popular toy, as I just said, was a black and white mouse named Mickey Mouse. Patent number D70840, which was issued on August 17, 1926, which was a couple of years before Mickey Mouse with the D. I've seen the rumor posted on a number of different websites that Performo went under because Disney sued them. I've done some research, and the TV show History Detectives did a bunch of research, and there is nothing that shows that that ever happened, that Disney never sued Performo. What happened was, is what happened to a lot of the companies in that time period. The Great Depression took them, and they filed for bankruptcy in middle of July 1933. Whether Walt's imagination was inspired by that little wooden mouse named Mickey, there's no way to tell. But Walt could really easily have come across Mickey in either the train station gift shop or being sold on the train, which they did a lot at that time period. There were a lot of cartoon mice out at the same time. There was a little mouse named Ignatz from Crazy Cat that used to throw a brick and hit Crazy Cat in the head, and then Crazy Cat would fall in love with him. In the Felix the Cat cartoons, there were similar mice, and that predated Mickey by 5 or 6 years. And Aesop's Movie Fables had a mouse called Milton the Mouse. Any of those could very easily have inspired Mickey. And it's likely that Mickey has his roots in all of those, and maybe even including the wooden Mickey. But our Mickey, Walt's Mickey, surpassed all of them. There'll never be another mouse quite like Disney's Mickey. For additional info on this subject, if you want to take a look at the History Detectives at www.pbs.org/historydetectives, that's where I got a lot of my information, and also from The Broken Toy by Craig L. Andrews, and the Middletown Borough website, which is the hometown of Performo Toys. They still lay claim to being the birthplace of Mickey Mouse.
Close your eyes. Don't peek. I've got a surprise. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to Mickey. Happy birthday to you.
Well, I came from an old Mickey Mouse cartoon, ran about 7 minutes, all about Mickey's birthday, and I thought that little portion was appropriate. Well, they got the Christmas decorations out at Disneyland. As of today, the 14th, they've been out actually for a couple of days, but today's the official unveiling of the Christmas decorations. I haven't been out there. Actually, I haven't been out there since Mickey's Halloween party, which was October the 7th. This is a long stretch for me, but I had a pretty bad traffic accident and trashed my beautiful car and had to buy a new one and had the flu, so just different odds and ends. I haven't been able to get out to the park, but I'm going to try to get out there in the next couple of days. And I think I may record this coming episode completely at the park rather than here on the microphone. It may be completely done on the portable recorder, so if it sounds a little different, that'll be why. Because I haven't done one at the park since I started redoing the show here, since I started the show back up. So I think it's time to do one there. I've recorded a few little segments, but I haven't recorded a whole show. Let's see, what else is going on with Disney? I just got done reading Disney Wars, which is pretty interesting. All about Eisner and Roy Disney and the war they ended up in over control of Disney and how close Disney came, excuse me, how close Disney came to being bought out by Comcast, which I had never even paid attention to. So I'm certainly glad that didn't happen. So if you get a chance, you want to read that, or you can download it on Audible if you have an account on audible.com. It's definitely worth a listen or a read. Another suggestion I'd have if you're a Disney fan is the book on Walt Disney by Neil Gabler. That's a definite good read, although Diane Disney Miller didn't care for it. But I think it actually paints a pretty favorable picture of Walt. So I'm not sure. There must have been something she didn't feel was accurate in the book, but I really enjoyed it. I've listened to it. I have the Audible version, and I've listened to the entire book, which it's the unabridged version, probably 25 or 30 times. So I feel like I know Walt pretty good from that, which is good. You know, you get out to the park, you have a kind of a feel for what Walt was trying to do and why he was trying to do it. So now I'm going to play a little birthday music, again, in honor of Mr. Mickey Mouse. So here we go with that.
So have a great day.
In the last few years, we've ventured into a lot of different fields, and we've had the opportunity to meet and work with a lot of wonderful people. I only hope that we never lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a mouse.
Congratulations, Mr. Mr. Mickey Mouse. Congratulations to you. Congratulations. Your picture show was fine. It's a hit. It's a hit. And we want to shake your hand. Congratulations. Happy days to you. You sure brought down the house. And we hope you have a lot of success. Congratulations, Mickey Mouse.
I wanna go.
Park hopping fast. Ride dropping, flying through space, mountain sky. Magical dreaming, tower drop screaming. It's a spectacular night. Jungle cruise roaring, Toy Story scoring. Electric light parade and my heart soaring. Everyone dancing, fireworks blasting. Let's go to Disney summer night dashing. Genie wishing, ice cream dishing. Laughing, autographing tonight. Move a busting, pixie dusting. Soaring high, clean out of sight.
Now, here's an audio clip back from a long, long time ago with Walt Disney describing how they used a multiplane camera to put things together. That multiplane camera was very interesting. If you get a chance, get online and do a search, and there are a lot of images of the camera and some videotape of what showing them how the camera was actually used. It was a giant contraption that Ub Iwerks helped engineer and put together. So if you get a chance, take a look at that. And here's Walt talking about the multiplane camera.
Now, this is a different kind of drawing. It also came out of our school of self-improvement here at the studio. It is a blueprint of a piece of equipment designed to make cartoons more realistic and enjoyable. This is the plan for a super cartoon camera. We call it the multiplane camera. It was intended for use in our feature-length cartoons. You see, we decided for features, the camera needed improvement too. Actually, the pre-feature cartoon camera was fairly simple in construction and operation, and generally very satisfactory. The problem was how to take a painting and make it behave like a real piece of scenery under the camera. The trouble was we were photographing a flat two-dimensional background. So we set about making plans and blueprints for a new cartoon camera that would overcome this. The different elements in the scene were separated according to their varying distances from the viewer. This put the moon on a plane farthest away from the camera. With our original picture broken down in this manner, it is possible to control the relative speed with which each individual part of it moves to or away from the camera. But the moon remains absolutely still, and so it will always remain the same, neither growing nor shrinking in size. Since this new camera used many planes, we called it the multiplane camera. And here now is our same moonlight scene, the way the multiplane camera sees it. As you can see, we finally got the moon to keep its proper distance.
You are listening to the Podketeer Podcast.
Podketeers, this next segment I recorded in the car that I totaled. Not on the day that I totaled it, but in the car that I totaled. And I recorded it right after I started doing the podcasts again. And I really kind of let you know where I come from on Disney and why I do what I do. So, on with that. How you doing, Podketeers? Y'all having a good day? I'm making a little recording in my automobile on the way home. Pardon the turn signal. You know, I was thinking today about podcasts and how they sometimes, when you first start doing one, sometimes they end up being a little different after they go for a while. I know when I started out doing Podketeer, now I've only done 11 episodes, but it's been over quite a bit of a time period. And I did probably another 5 or 6 that I didn't actually ever play. And I did 20 some odd basketball podcasts. So I've done this for a little while. And one thing I've noticed is that it's kind of like a team, or maybe a painting. And sometimes after you've started and you're intending to do one thing with it, and after a little while it kind of morphs into something else. And you know, when I first started doing the Podketeer podcast back in 2007, when I first had the idea to do it, number one, I had a lot more time on my hands than I do now. And I was reasonably heavy into toys still, buying and selling toys. Now, that's been 4 years ago, and that's no longer number one on my list of concerns. So whereas when I originally got the idea of doing Podketeer, I was thinking of making it mainly about collectibles and products for sale at Disneyland, that now doesn't interest me quite so much. Now, one reason it doesn't is the stuff that's being sold at Disneyland is kind of losing the collectibles feel, and feel more like a retail. It's different. For instance, the China store, they had the China Closet. They used to have hundreds of different figures in there of all the different Disney characters. Now it's been reduced to a very small number in comparison to what it once was. The Big Figs. There were quite a few different Big Figs, and now it seems as though they're phasing the Big Figs out, and they're going to a scaled down Big Fig that sells for almost what the large ones used to sell for. Now, I don't know if this is a conscious thing, or if it's just I'm noticing that they're out of stock of some things, or I don't know. But it definitely appears to be that way. And that kind of stuff kind of pulls me away from wanting to do a collectibles type podcast. Now, the other thing that's happening is my love of history is rearing its ugly head. Now, that fact, the fact that I have read Neil Gabler's biography of Walt Disney probably 30 or 40 times, and I have a pretty good understanding, I think, of Walt's life and what he thought about Disneyland and what drove him to want to have Disneyland, at least if you believe Neil Gabler. I know Diane Disney Miller isn't a big fan of Neil Gabler, but I feel that it's Walt with all the warts. I mean, it's not an airbrushed Walt Disney. But I think that it definitely, he comes off as being still pretty shiny and pretty by the end of the thing. I know that I shed a tear every time I listen to it when he dies, even though I know what's coming, and It's still just the way he talks about it, and the way all the cast members and Marty Sklar, Bob Gurr, and Tony Baxter, and the people that were involved with Walt, how they reacted. Even though a lot of them really had kind of a contemptuous relationship with Walt. They all loved him, but they had some problems with him too, at least according to Neil Gabler. There were definitely issues along the way with most of those people. But anyway, the history, back to the history part, I'm straying from my subject. With the internet, YouTube, and different other sources of video, both old and new, Disney Archive Collections things, which I have just about every piece of video and audio you could find. I spend a significant amount of time digging for this stuff, and I have uncovered a bunch of it. And I am using other people's work for my podcast. But I appreciate it. I will give them credit. But this needs to be said, that most of these people haven't created anything new. All they've done is what I'm doing, except they got it from some other site, and I'm getting it from their site. So, it isn't like I'm taking their original work and doing something with it, because I'm not. I'm taking it off of their website, and they took it off of somebody else's. So, I appreciate all the work you did digging up this stuff, finding it, and taking your little recorder out there and plugging it into the right place and getting the music. There's a theme park guy on YouTube that has tons of uncorrupted soundtracks from the different rides and from the Mickey Mouse Express. And then Mickey Mouse Express has a really long music loop. And he's got the whole schmear there on YouTube. And there's no voices or anything. It's uncorrupted. Somehow he got a hold of the raw track. Or found a bus with nobody sitting in it and a good recorder. I don't know how he did it. But my guess would be is he probably got somebody to sneak him a copy. He knows somebody someplace and he's able to get a hold of a copy of this stuff. I did. I know some cast members out there at the park still, and a couple of them have gotten me I have the Christmas soundtrack from Disneyland. Somebody gave me a CD of it, and apparently it gets passed around with the cast members, so that's not unusual. So I'm sure these other soundtracks make their way around, and a lot of the stuff I use, they had that 50th anniversary collection of CDs that had a lot of audio from the different shows around the park, and they had the Mickey closing thing that I use at the end of every podcast, that Disneyland is now closed, and with the Gang of Five out there talking, and that came off of that. So that's what I'm doing right now. Is I'm pulling a lot of the old audio I've found, different schools. I've pulled stuff off of their sites, and it's amazing where you find things. That Walt Disney shipboard interview, I ran across that on the shipping company's website. It had it on there, and I found it other places. It's not a really swell copy. The sound's distorted pretty bad. I'm trying to clean it up before I use it. But it's kind of an interesting interview. It's an interview Walt actually, you could tell if you watch the video on YouTube. It's available on YouTube. I've seen it. But, and if you watch it, you could tell Walt wasn't real thrilled about giving the interview, but the guy kind of cornered him and bothered his family and his kids and everything. Yeah, he had Sharon and Diane with him. So he wasn't real thrilled about doing it, but he did it. But there wasn't a whole lot. He was talking about the movies and stuff. That was quite a while before the World's Fair or any of that. So he was mainly just talking about the films. Snow White and so forth. So that's what I think Podketeer is going to be. Is it's going to kind of be a Disneyland history lesson. I'm going to go out to the park. You know, and the park is just a treasure trove of history. Everywhere you walk, there's something cool happened there. Somebody was there, somebody famous was there, or some famous event happened there. Or maybe Walt sat there for a minute and looked around, or there's some photo of Walt sitting in that spot. I mean, it's just really cool. And I think it's worth sharing with everybody. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to dig up some of this stuff. And I'm going to do those Walking with Walt segments where I go to a spot in the park. And maybe it's a spot that still has historical significance Disney-wise. And I'll talk about that. Because the parks change it. They just announced at D23 they're taking the Carnation Plaza little dance thing out of there. And they say, oh, the dancing's going to stay, but for how long? You know, that's just something to mollify the crowds. Because they're going to change that. They're going to move what's going on down there at the Princess Fair theater right there by Toontown. They're going to move what's going on there into a permanent structure. Then they'll probably retheme that theater and turn it into something else, put a different show in there, which wouldn't hurt anything. Or maybe they've got something else planned for that. They didn't reveal it, but it's certainly possible. And I've got recordings of a lot of the people as they got their windows dedicated to them. And so I'll go out to the spot there in the park where the window is. I'll give you a little history of the person who has their window there and what they did significantly that made them worthy of a window. Because there are a lot of Disney legends that don't have windows. Many, many, many Disney legends that do not have windows. So having a window is far more exclusive in terms of a tribute than being a Disney legend. Because there's hundreds of Disney legends, and I don't even think there's 100 windows. I think there's like 80-something windows, as I recall reading. Somebody had counted them. So that's by far a bigger tribute. So if I were a Disney person of note and had to pick between being a Disney legend or having a window, give me a window. Because as long as Disneyland's there, you'll be immortal. And I hope Disneyland's there for a long, long time. I hope we can make lots more history there at the park. So I just wanted to go into this. I know I'm rambling on, but I wanted to give you a feel up close and personal, out from my heart, why I'm doing Podketeer the way I'm doing it. I just think it's important. I think there's a lot of new people into Disneyland and Disney. There were a lot of young people at the D23 convention. And I think it helps for them to know who Walt Disney was, why he did what he did, and why the park is so special, and why it matters. You know, the things that if we don't share them with the younger people, they're not gonna understand. Why does it matter that the park is clean all the time? Why does it matter that the walls and the railings and everything aren't all scratched up and chipped? And why does it matter that there's not graffiti all over the place and people haven't scratched their names into the windows? And why does that matter? Well, you and I know why it matters. Because you know that Walt wouldn't have had any of those things. He would not have allowed them. And we all have to carry on Walt's spirit. We have to think about that and go forward with that. And that's important. It's vitally important. Because Disneyland is not just an amusement park to me. Disneyland is part of my heart. Disneyland means more to me than just a piece of property. I go to Disneyland when I can't afford it. I buy Disney stuff. I eat dinner out there when I could just as easily go to Jack in the Box and get dinner. And the reason I do it is I want Disneyland to survive. I don't mind spending my money there because I want Disneyland to survive. And I know, oh, look at all the money they're making and this, that, but you know, that may not always be the case. And the day that the Disneys no longer have controlling stock of Disneyland, and the day when some Chinese or Japanese or European conglomerate steps in and buys Disneyland, will be the end of Disneyland. So we have to make sure that Disneyland stays in the family and make sure that it's maintained and treasured by all of us, to make sure that it's cared for and treated in the way that it should be. So that's all for my tirade. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you agree with me. And now on with the rest of the show. Well, Podketeers, I think that's enough of forcing my voice upon you for this evening. I hope you enjoyed episode number 21 of the Podketeer podcast. And I hope you'll join us out here again next week. So, as I always say, y'all have a magical Disney week. Ta-ta for now. I'd just like to take a moment to again thank my friend Rick Moyer at MoyerMultimedia.com for taking the time to put together the theme song to the Podketeer podcast. If you need any voiceover work, or you need any kind of a theme song or music put together for a presentation or for your company or for a podcast, you look Rick up. He could not be more helpful. His name is Rick Moyer, and the name of his website is MoyerMultimedia.com.
Podketeer is in no way associated with the Walt Disney Company or any of its affiliates. Mickey Mouse Copyright 1928. The Walt Disney Company. any similarity to Disney characters or real persons without satirical purpose, the act of reviewing products, or reporting on newsworthy events, is entirely coincidental. This podcast is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license. For more information, visit our website at www.podcateer.com. The great caricature artwork on the Podcateer website was created by Disneyland artist Catherine Clark. You may email her at portraitsandcaricatures@yahoo.com. Her blog is located at www.myspace.com/Clark_art.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Disneyland has now concluded its normal operating day.
Yeah, folks, and me and my pals hope you had a swell time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mickey?
Uh-huh?
It's that time.
What time is that, Minnie?
Oh, Goofy?
Huh? Oh.
Now it's time to say goodnight to all our company. M-I-C.
See you real soon.
It's always Mickey Mouse.
K-E-Y.
Why?
Because we like you.
M-O-U-S-E.
Careful getting home.
For your shopping convenience, this evening, Main Street will remain open for an additional half hour.